Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 Thursday afternoon, September 5th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The latest numbers on unemployment claims and jobless claims are out today ahead of tomorrow's government employment report for August. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the NFL season gets underway tonight. Baltimore at Kansas City. The Bears open their schedule at home on Sunday, taking on Tennessee. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. And Mark, you are talking to us, I should say this in the words of former WBBM sportscaster Brent Musburger, you are listening live to Mark Gannis, who is actually joining us from Brazil this afternoon. You are in the country to take in the Green Bay Packers and the Philadelphia Eagles this weekend, and that's a great jumping off point, Mark, to talk about just the international reach of American football.
Absolutely. This is one of the great promotions that the NFL is doing to expand American-style football all over the world. Played three games in the UK. We've been playing in Germany the last 3 years, and again this year. Mexico City games have been wonderful, and now we're hitting South America. You're going to see NFL football games literally all over the globe in the next decade.
Now, last year, we had the merger of two extremely powerful media entities, and I'm talking about the NFL and the Swifties, thanks to the ongoing relationship of Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. And even though that may have been a big deal in individual households across the country, I know it was in my house. I have three daughters, three Swifties at home, and they wanted to watch the NFL as a result of that relationship. It got them into the game. And did that boost the business of football last year?
No doubt. It boosted football in two ways. First, the ratings did go up. Casual viewers, people who like maybe the girls in your household, who may not have been as interested in the NFL, became far more interested, watched more games. And with the Kansas City Chiefs, Travis Kelce's team, her boyfriend, for those people who don't know, going all the way to the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl, that also increased ratings. Then you add the fact that she played her concerts in many NFL stadiums, and in many cases, the NFL teams benefited economically from a series of sold-out concerts that she played in. So the NFL benefited multiple ways from Taylor Swift.
We're talking about the business of football with Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago, talking to us from Brazil this afternoon. Now, a lot of hype around Caleb Williams and the Bears, and it's been a while since the Bears' last playoff game, the infamous double doink at the beginning of 2019. That was it for the Bears in the postseason. But in the last couple of years, we've watched football return to Los Angeles with two teams. We've watched L.A. in the Super Bowl. We've watched a Super Bowl in L.A. What does it mean when a large market team like the Bears becomes a playoff contender and hopefully a consistent playoff contender? What does that mean for the valuation of the franchise?
It means a lot for the league and for the franchise. You know, no matter how much a team like, say, Cincinnati is successful and draws in its market, you know, a 70-80 rating, it doesn't matter compared to New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Dallas, the big markets. A slight move there moves the needle. A big move in a smaller market doesn't. The Bears have not been competitive for a very long time. You know, the big problem has been that they haven't really been able to find a quarterback who is going to do it for them and lead them to a lot of victories. Caleb Williams may break that streak. He is that good, and he has that much of an attitude. And in sports, you don't just sell victories, you sell hope. And Caleb Williams brings hope to Bears fans.
Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Court Limited in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. He is in Brazil for the Green Bay Packers and Philadelphia Eagles matchup this weekend. And, of course, the Bears take on the Tennessee Titans at noon on Soldier Field on Sunday. Coming up, numbers on private payrolls and jobless claims, plus a preview of tomorrow's government jobs report.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The government jobs report for August comes out tomorrow, but there is some key employment data out today. We welcome in Matt Mategan, CEO, Blue World Asset Managers in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. The ADP report, the private payroll report, is part of the Jobs Week ritual. The private estimation from ADP, the payroll processing company, comes out first. And, of course, the federal jobs report comes out 7:30 on that Friday morning, Chicago time. But some concerning signs coming out of the ADP report. But there seems to be a little bit of a caveat, though, Matt, that the ADP report and the federal report, they rarely agree.
Can't we keep talking about the hope of Caleb Fields and the Bears?
Yeah, you want to talk about a little Caleb Williams and the Bears? We could talk about that. That's a lot more fun.
That would be more fun than talking about those jobs data.
You might say you're bullish on the Bears, ironically.
Ironically enough. Yeah, you are correct that there are really, in addition to the ADP, there are a handful of other public and private sources for jobs data. And really the reason these reports exist is to try and predict what the BLS, official BLS report, is going to say tomorrow. And the correlation is usually low, and that's validated when, you know, when there's money involved. Would we use any of these reports to make a decision to go long or short the S&P futures? And the answer is no, but that doesn't mean the data isn't valid. And the reason we can look at the data today like ADP, not only did it miss the estimate, it came in below last month's total, and last month's total was revised down by double digits. So the ADP report was definitely a disappointment, definitely weaker than last. But we got to keep in mind, this is against the backdrop of a downward revision in the annual jobs created at the level of the BLS by almost a million jobs. Now, we rang the alarm bell on this about halfway through last year. Every month we get revisions to the prior 2 months. And in all my years of following this, I have never seen such massive and consistent downward revisions. And so when they were coming out with the annual benchmark revision a couple weeks ago, it was utterly devastating. So that makes the weak numbers in Challenger, layoffs, FYI, initial claims, and ADP look unfortunately fairly predictive this time around.
And it looks like some of the job losses, though, are slow and steady. It's not like we're seeing massive layoffs across a number of sectors. It's just happening a little bit here and a little bit there. And the next thing you know, you have job growth slowing down. So what signal does this send to the Fed?
Well, the Fed, and you probably recall, I've been very critical of the Fed strategy, and the primary driver for keeping rates high all this time has been, well, the high rates haven't hurt the economy, just look at the job growth. Well, guess what? The job growth was ridiculously overstated. And now the Fed is—they're really wearing some handcuffs now. So, what are they going to do next? Unfortunately, not only do they have to react,
I'm afraid they're going to overreact.
Matt Mategan, CEO, Blue World Asset Managers in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, a fast food chain and a group of seasonal Halloween stores are joining forces.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A new business partnership involves fast casual food chain Chipotle and Spirit Halloween stores. Let's take a look at the strategy behind the move with RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at the foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, thank you for joining us today. And this is not necessarily a new concept. I mean, for a couple of years in the Chicago area, Portillo's has been selling various like baby merchandise. You can get a swaddling blanket that makes a newborn look like it's wrapped up in the Italian beef wrapping, which I get a big kick out of. But it seems like more and more fast casual chains, Chipotle, the latest example of which, are getting into the official costume and merchandise business.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think this is one of the more interesting partnerships we've seen in the fast casual space in some time. As you mentioned, Chipotle is partnering mm-hmm. with Spirit of Halloween to introduce some exclusive costumes based on Chipotle items and utensils. It's unique. It certainly will create some buzz. And I think it kind of reflects a lot of trends we're seeing in the industry. One is the idea that Halloween and other holidays are a major driver of visitation trends. People want to participate in them, and they can certainly be beneficial to these companies and driving visitation trends. But we're also seeing that, you know, just doing something unique and creating buzz is so important in this day and age, especially when we haven't seen, to be honest, a ton of menu innovation. We've seen some things work, but, we really have been bereft of new menu innovation coming out of the pandemic. So things like this can get people excited. And, our visitation trends have showed really strong positive results when people do these kind of promotions.
And the Chipotle Spirit Halloween collaboration, this just didn't come out of the blue. This is the end result of a 2-year process of developing an online joke. This began a couple of years ago with a fake Chipotle fork bodysuit with the caption, "Found your costume," and then it just built from there.
Yeah, I'd even say it goes further back. Chipotle's really had a lock on the Halloween holiday for some time, going back to at least a decade with its burrito promotion, where customers could come in dressed as a burrito and get either a free or discounted burrito. And so I think that was even the starting point for this. And to your point, it did start to take off a bit more the last couple of years with memes. So I guess this, in their minds, was the next natural evolution of the promotion and running it there. Be very interested to see the performance. I bet, like a lot of these products, these are going to be very hot sellers. Most importantly, I think it's going to help to drive visitation for Chipotle right around the Halloween holiday.
This also seems like the new marketing normal, RJ, because Chipotle, not the first chain to really take advantage of something that achieved escape velocity online. Not too long ago, we were talking about McDonald's and introducing the Grimace milkshake, more or less to celebrate Grimace's birthday, and it took on a life of its own online, and the company had to acknowledge it.
It did, and it was another one that was very successful in driving people to the restaurants. Our visitation data was exceptionally strong last June, the end of last June, when they ran that promotion. Typically we see this around the Christmas and year-end holidays, particularly around some of the new products. You know, a lot of the brands, Taco Bell, KFC, come to mind, Burger King included, come up with certain promotional products that just either gag gifts or things for the end of the year, but they typically have a positive impact on visitation trends. So you're right, this is not the first group to do it, but it'll be, and certainly won't be the last, but it'll be interesting to see how the performance is this holiday season.
And you can dress up as characters from the McDonaldland universe, RJ, but it's all off the books, though, because I'm doing a search right now. You could go as the Hamburger Thief, because Hamburglar is copyrighted. And if you want to be Grimace, you can get a purple monster costume off of Amazon. But unlike the knockoffs, the Chipotle merchandise is the real deal and has the official Chipotle seal of approval.
Yeah, we talked about nostalgia being a big theme across quick service restaurants, and I think that'll be evident this year with Halloween costumes. So I think you're spot on there, Rob.
RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at the Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Charges are now filed in the March murder of a mother of three in the southwest suburbs. There's an update today on the federal election interference case against former President Trump. In Technology Thursday, the rapid growth of artificial intelligence now includes further integration into Apple products. WBBM Business, the markets.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are lower. The Dow is down 342 points. The NASDAQ is down 21. The S&P 500 is down 32. We have 84 degrees right now in Chicago. Under mostly sunny skies, it's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour. A man from Chicago was charged in the killing of a mother of three in Orland Park nearly 6 months ago. A judge ordered 29-year-old Kieran Williams to remain behind bars as he faces a murder charge in the March shooting that killed 28-year-old postal worker Michelle Williams. Orland Park Police Commander Scott Lefko says she was in a vehicle on the side of Pond Willow Road.
And at that time, there was a vehicle that arrived on scene, and multiple subjects exited the vehicle and discharged their firearms at the vehicle, striking Michelle multiple times.
Two other people face lesser charges in the case. A lawyer for Donald Trump has clashed with a judge in the federal election interference prosecution of the former president. Attorney John Lauro is suggesting that the government is rushing forward with what he calls an illegitimate indictment at the height of the campaign for the White House. The hearing in a Washington, D.C. federal courtroom today is the first in the case in nearly a year. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chris Johnson, market strategist with the Johnson Research Group in Cincinnati. Chris, thank you for joining us today. And is it safe to say that today's sell-off is once again stemming from fears that the job market continues to weaken?
Rob, this is a situation where the market, if you remember, 3 or 4 months ago, was kind of looking for some bad news, right? It was a Goldilocks situation. You didn't want too hot. You didn't want too cool. And the market actually was looking for some bad news because they were looking for the Fed to lower rates. Now that we know the Fed's going to lower rates here in 13 days, investors are starting to feel the pressure of, okay, do we really want any bad news? We got that print this morning from the ADP number, worst number since 2021. So people are, that sentiment swing is going from optimism to hope, which is where we were hoping that everything would line up for the Fed. And now that things are lined up, it's actually turning to fear and reacting to the reality that, yeah, you know what, the Fed's been trying to slow things down. It's not that bad, but everybody's worst-casing it. When everybody's that optimistic and hopeful, it's always time to be cautious.
Well, it seems like everybody's talking themselves into the idea that the Fed is going to cut interest rates by half a point compared to a quarter point. What's your analysis of that particular situation?
Take it off the table. Right now, if you look at Fed fund futures, you're looking at a 65% chance, I believe it is. We're two right now that you're going to see. Actually, we're at 85% chance that you're only going to see 25 basis points. Think about the message that the Fed has been sending. They want to be slow. They want to be very, very patient with what's going on with the economy. If they go from zero to 50 basis points in terms of dropping rates, it's going to send a signal to investors, what don't we know that the Fed knows about the economy, that now they have to start injecting a little bit more liquidity into the market. So I think you need to count on 25 basis points and not be disappointed if it's not 50. Let's go with 25 here.
Now, a thought that occurred to me just as we see the employment numbers being revised downward, and the pessimist would say, well, things are worse than we thought, to your point, because fewer people were employed than we thought. But at the same time, the gains in retail, the gains in the services sector, like all the economic gains that have taken place over the past 2 years, those are real. And maybe they were powered – the fact that they were powered by a labor market that might have been a little more underwhelming than we thought. How do you square that particular circle?
I look at a couple things. First of all, you're exactly right. We still had a lot of cash sitting in bank accounts and money market funds. And when you look at the Fed's reports on M1, M2, all of that, it showed that investors, not only investors, but consumers had huge amounts of cash sitting in their accounts. What's happened is we've gone through that. That pandemic cash lasted very long. And you had exactly what you just pointed out, Rob. You had a very strong job market. So everybody kind of looked at it from the perspective of, you know, what me worry? I've got a job and I've got money set aside. Now it's getting a little thinner in terms of the money sitting aside. And thank goodness that the Fed is going to come in and lower interest rates, because now you'll have people going out and starting to buy homes when we get a little bit lower. You'll have people thinking about buying cars. That consumer discretionary spending is going to get charged up a little bit by the Fed here. Not a lot. I think in 2025, you're going to see that effect. But to your point, look at what's happened with some of the high-end retailers. Because if you're watching what's going to be a lead for the economy, watch those companies like the RH, which is the old Restoration Hardware, and places where people spend a lot of money, your high income, they've kind of parsed back here. And historically, it is that high income area that starts planning for 6 months and 12 months. They're great planners. The old saying, you know, making your first million is hard, but keeping it is harder. They do a good job of keeping it, and they've been cutting back on their budgets. That's the one thing I want to watch, Rob, when it comes to the consumer discretionary and the retail. See how they play out here over the next couple of quarters, because that could be your warning sign that we do see a storm in 2025.
Chris Johnson, market strategist with the Johnson Research Group in Cincinnati. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, Apple ups the ante on AI.
It's 60 minutes of financial planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday. Apple is incorporating more artificial intelligence into its products, and the results could be game-changing. We're joined by Dan Gallagher, tech reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Heard on the Street column in San Francisco. Dan, thank you for joining us today. And so far, the story of AI, consumer-facing AI, has been kind of hit or miss. It is definitely turning into a productivity tool that you can use in the office, but the AI tools that are available inside Facebook or inside LinkedIn or even inside your smartphone, not exactly proving their worth as of yet.
There hasn't been really a killer app for, you know, what I call on-device AI, when you have, you know, essentially AI chips and capabilities embedded on a device that just hasn't proven to move a lot of units yet. And so I think, and that's the thing to watch for here, because Apple historically is often not the first with something, but they're often very good at selling, you know, what they do come up with. And so can they actually make this concept sell? That's the big question.
Right. I think for Apple and the way that they've been working for the past nearly 50 years is that phrase, our plans are measured in centuries. As you point out correctly, they may not be the first, but they are the best at introducing something to the public. What are some ideas that are kicking around as a way in which AI can really enhance your smartphone or tablet experience?
Well, I mean, the whole point behind on-device AI is that it can be faster, because right now when you use generative AI tools, you know, you're sending stuff up to, you know, a network in the cloud. It's coming back. There's lag time. There's some privacy concerns, because if you want to, like, generative AI, let's say, to, you know, help you with personal health data or something, you'd probably rather have that on your physical device and not going up to the cloud, so you can have better privacy protections. So you can have speed, privacy, and I think a lot of concepts are still being worked out here. And I think that's part of the problem why on-device AI hasn't been a big seller, because even at a lot of the kind of optimistic demo tech companies have come up with, there's been some cool things like real-time translation between languages, but not a lot of stuff that, like, again, like, really moves the needle in a big way to make people say, I got to have that.
What are some of the ways in which we're taking advantage of AI on our devices already? I mean, I can think of two time-saving apps just off the top of my head. I mean, obviously, directions on your phone. And if you have Shazam, using that to find out what song you're hearing at a public space, do those involve a great deal of AI, or has AI been used to enhance its workability for you?
AI has been in our devices and amongst the services we use for actually some time now. What's new here is this thing called generative AI, where the machine language actually kind of essentially creates content for you. So you have a tool where you can actually use something like Microsoft's Copilot to look at a big mess of data on a spreadsheet and say, figure out where are the interesting trends here, and it helps figure things out like that. So that's the new thing that we haven't seen yet. But actual AI, we've seen in a lot of places when you search in Google, and it auto suggests things to fill out. That's AI. So there's AI is already out there in a big way. Generative AI is what's still kind of new in the field.
If someone cracks the code on generative AI for your device, could that be as revolutionary as the device in the first place? Could that be the next iPhone?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, that's been some of the optimistic projections here, that this is like the biggest tech trend since the internet. Honestly, I think it's going to take a long time to see that one of those kind of capabilities come in and to essentially kind of overcome the some of the resistance, consumers, where are things priced at. So all those things are still really in theory. I think mostly we're going to see more of evolutionary changes, things, new capabilities and services will come in. Some we're going to like, some we're going to not. I don't see anything revolutionary on the horizon yet.
Dan Gallagher, tech reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Heard on the Street column in San Francisco. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday, and still to come, a look at the financial markets through the lens of a contrarian.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Despite the recent dip in stocks, bullish sentiment among market timers remains strong, suggesting there could be a further decline in equities. Joining us with a contrarian view on stocks is Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, thank you for joining us today. Now, there are very few surprises in life, and there should be no surprises when it comes to the financial markets, especially if you listen to the Noon Business Hour, because it was you, Mark Hulbert, on this show a couple of weeks ago who said a correction was due, and even though September is the cruelest month, especially in election years, it seems like you're correct so far.
Well, I love to take the compliment, but I don't claim my track record is any better than anyone else's. It turns out that the market short-term gyrations are a lot of statistical noise, so we all end up grasping somewhat at straws to try to get any notion of which way the market will go. And I rely on contrarian analysis, as you know, and it only tells you the market's direction over the next couple of weeks or so. So this is only appropriate for short-term traders. Long-term investors need not decide to increase or decrease their exposure based on sentiment. But if you do look for the very short term, as you mentioned in the intro, the market tends to do the opposite of whatever the majority, the consensus has you believe will happen. And so the fact that there's still a lot of optimism out there on Wall Street, despite the market's volatility over the last couple of days, including that 600-plus point drop in the Dow to begin the month of September, that suggests that we still have a little more downside to go before we wring out of the market some of that excessive bullishness that is probably the quote-unquote slope of hope that the market's like to decline.
Now, tomorrow, if the government jobs report comes in below expectations, could that be the cold water of reality for a lot of people?
It definitely could, and I don't mean to suggest at all that contrarian analysis has any insight into what the jobs report may end up telling us. What the sentiment data tell you is that relative to whatever conditions exist, there's an excessive amount of optimism or excessive amount of pessimism. The market's prospects over the short term don't change that much from day to day. If you look at Monday alone, the collective value of all U.S. stocks dropped by, I forget the exact number, but it was approaching $1 trillion. it's not as though corporate America at the end of Monday was worth $1 trillion less than it was on the last Friday of August. And yet that's what excessive sentiment swings would have you believe. And so we're always overreacting at as collectively as investors, being emotional beings, we overreact. And that's what you count on as a contrarian, that there'll be some sort of bounce back.
And also, very quickly, Mark, it seems like contrarianism is, it can serve you well in life as well as it can in investing, because it really does kind of force you to examine your beliefs you may have held before and see if those beliefs stand up under scrutiny.
Absolutely. It turns out the things that everyone else believes are the ones that are easy enough for us just to take for granted. And those are the ones, as you point out, that we should be spending extra energy examining to see if they really hold up.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com in Washington. Thank you for joining us today.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.